Fancy rubbing something into your face made from mercury or rat poison or aniline dye. In the era before the regulation of the cosmetics industry, you could have done this and you might have looked gorgeous, but it would be much to your detriment, I'd have thought. Cosmetics might to some seem unnecessary, even oppressive. To others, makeup is an essential part of the way to face the world. Which camp are you in? I'd love to know. You can post a comment on Facebook if you like. Natasha Lester used to work in the cosmetics business for L'Oreal Paris. She's now a novelist, but she draws on this background in cosmetics for her historical novel that's called Her Mother's Secret. Hi, Natasha.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. Now, Natasha, there's a story from 100 years ago that was your starting point for the novel. Tell us that story.
So I heard this story, first of all, when I worked for L'Oreal. I was the marketing manager for Maybelline, and they tell you about this young woman called Mabel who was going out on a date that night with a man she wanted to impress. And at that time, this was 1917, there were very few cosmetics around. There was face powder, a little bit of lip colour, and that was it. So what women used to do to make their lashes darker, a la the movie stars of the time, was to use something called lamp black, which is essentially the soot from a candle. So obviously this involved a lot of singed eyelashes in the process, and Mabel was in the bathroom one night trying to blacken her lashes with the lamp black, and her brother happened to see her and he asked her what she was doing, and he said, I think there must be a better way. And I really can't believe it was a man who thought of this and not a woman, but he got the lamp black and he mixed it with Vaseline, and they used that to put on Mabel's lashes to make them darker, and she went off on her date. And nobody knows how her date went that night, but what everybody knows is that was the first invention of mascara, this combination of lamp black and Vaseline. So Tom put together Mabel's name, Mabel, with the word Vaseline to make Maybelline, and Maybelline mascara was thus invented. And so I wanted to write about that time when cosmetics use just began to become something that was sort of slightly acceptable in society.
Is that story true, though? I mean, it does sound a bit like it's dreamt up by a marketing person.
I know. And when I heard it, I thought, that can't possibly be true. But no, if you look through all the Maybelline archives, there it is. And that was, and Tom then, you know, founded the business and ran that as a mascara business for a number of years before it became the brand we know today.
Well, yes. I mean, that was then an early mascara to be retailed. But early on in the piece, how would you get your hands on it? I mean, was it almost a sort of under-the-counter
thing? Absolutely. It was a taboo thing. It was like, you know, bootleg liquor. You had to order it via mail order. You couldn't go to a department store and buy mascara. It was acceptable to wear powder and a little bit of lipstick. Rouge was only for ladies of the night. Mascara was only for ladies of the night or the movie stars like Theda Bara in Cleopatra. But certainly it wasn't something you could just pop down to the shop and buy in the way that we can buy it now. And women were judged very harshly for wearing things like rouge and mascara.
Well, an example of those attitudes that you found as part of your research is an article from 1920 in the Atlantic Monthly?
That's right, yes. So the Atlantic Monthly asked four people to comment on the state of the youth of the day, because obviously that's an ongoing thing. Every generation feels that the youth is going to rack and ruin. And of course they asked an older man to comment, and his name was Mr. Grundy. And he wrote in that article that if young women were using barbarous methods to attract young men, then it was up to older men like him to use uncivilized warfare to subjugate women. And these barbaric methods that he's referring to that the women were supposedly using were things like jazz dancing, rolled pantyhose, and wearing rouge and mascara. And so it's just incredible to me that at a time when, you know, women were dying in childbirth left, right and centre, poverty was rife, overcrowding in tenements and things like that, that the Atlantic Monthly would devote, you know, six pages to allow this man to essentially exhort violence against women for what he saw as the crime of wearing rouge and mascara. It's quite shocking, really, to see, you know, what it was like for a woman back then to just want to do something as simple as make her lashes a bit darker.
At around that time, you could get the sack for wearing rouge.
Absolutely, yeah. Sales clerk was fired from Macy's in 1915 for daring to wear rouge to work. You know, can you imagine having slightly pinker cheeks than usual being a sackable offence? It's really hard to believe. It's only 100 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've got a very independent woman at the centre of your story. Leonora is the daughter of a chemist.
That's right.
A pharmacist.
Yep.
What's the mission she's on?
So she's on a mission to say that it's okay for women who want to wear cosmetics to be able to wear cosmetics. Not that everyone needs to or should wear cosmetics, but that women shouldn't have to subject themselves to putting poisons and things on their face because the industry was unregulated. They shouldn't have to order it via mail order as if it was something illegal like bootleg liquor at the time.
To arrive in a plain brown wrapper.
Yeah, that's right. And also that she wanted to make it more widely available because a lot of women were sitting in their kitchens making lip colours on the stove, basically, because they couldn't get these things in stores.
Amanda Smith with you here in Life Matters, along with Natasha Lester, whose novel Her Mother's Secret is set around the cosmetics industry early in the 20th century. Natasha, this really is about the birth of the modern cosmetics industry, isn't it? What research did you do to write about the manufacture and creation of cosmetics in this era?
So because, as I say, women used to go into their kitchens and make their own cosmetics, I thought, well, I should do that too, because at the start, certainly my heroine, Leo, is in the back room of the chemist store mixing
up
lip
colour.
Now,
Leo is a woman.
That's
Leo,
right.
Is short,
yes,
for
Leo is short for Leonora. Yep. Yes. So she's in the back of the chemist shop making these things up on the stove. So I did that too, because essentially to make lipstick, all you need is some wax, some oil and some colour or some pigment and maybe some scent. So it's really only four basic ingredients that anybody can get, beeswax, some almond oil, things like that. So I had a go at mixing up my own lip colour, which was lots of fun. I don't think I'll give up my career as a novelist anytime soon and become a cosmetics manufacturer, but at least it showed me what women had to do back then to be able to get
something
like.
Was it?
It was actually pretty easy. I mean, you melt the wax and you use the oil to emulsify, and then you add the pigment and the colour. And that's the hardest part of the process, getting the right amount of colour. I think it's either too much or not quite enough if you're not used to it.
Yeah, well, it's an issue buying a lipstick too, getting the right colour.
Exactly. 100 years on, it's still an issue.
Well, now women have actually been wearing makeup for centuries and centuries. Mm. There are fantastic recipes from the Renaissance, for example, that use all sorts of ingredients, including foundation creams made of lead.
Yes.
But that was also the case. Dangerous ingredients, as you've mentioned, as I've mentioned, were also used in the first few decades of the 20th century.
Yes, absolutely. It was only in the mid-1930s when the industry became regulated. And one of the more tragic products was an eyelash tint that essentially burned women's corneas off and blinded them. It was made from a dye that was corrosive to the eyes. And so it started off as a bit of mild redness and then quickly developed into, you know, burnt corneas, blindness and all kinds of terrible things. And it took many years of those kinds of things happening before somebody said, okay, this isn't good enough. We need to protect people who are wearing these kinds of things and stop people from manufacturing things that can damage us, you know, irreversibly.
I mentioned a face cream or something with mercury in it.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. And rat poison was another common ingredient in things like face creams, skin whiteners as well. You know, you could literally, you know, it was almost something you could die from wearing cosmetics in those very early days.
So who pushed for the regulation of the industry? How did that come about?
It came about through a lot of these cases being reported in the press. It came about through activism from some consumers, and it also came about from activism from the cosmetics manufacturers, who were the Elizabeth Ardens and the Helena Rubinsteins, who were doing things properly and didn't want, obviously, these other people to damage the industry that they had worked so hard to build up.
Yes, so you mentioned those two women,
yes.
Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein, who were, I guess, pioneers of that modern cosmetics industry. Helena Rubinstein, we know because there's an Australian
That's
connection
right.
too. She moved from Poland to Australia early in the 20th century, started selling her face cream.
That's right.
And using... she used this country's very abundant supply of lanolin, didn't
yes,
she?
Yes, she did.
And then moved to America and was incredibly successful. How important have those sorts of women been in the business of cosmetics?
Oh, they've been so important, but even their contributions were grossly undervalued. There was an article in Fortune magazine in 1938 talking about industry. And it essentially says in that article that women working in areas like a fashion design and cosmetic production are not real businesswomen because their industries are not vital. Men work in vital industries. And it essentially equated this industry, which by then was worth $400 million, it had been worth only $40 million 10 years earlier, basically was saying that these were cottage industries that didn't count as being anything of importance to the economy, which when obviously it was this hugely important business to the economy. And these women were doing this amazing job of, you know, transforming the advertising industry as well as transforming manufacturing and the cosmetics industry in general, but they were still undervalued and considered to be, you know, much less than men in other industries because it was cosmetics and therefore not vital and not important.
Is the cosmetics industry still run by women?
It was interesting. Even women like Elizabeth Arden back in the 1920s and 1930s, she surrounded herself with men. All of the other key people who supported her in the business were men. She wasn't necessarily someone who allowed women to surround her and support her, which is why in my book I wanted to have a woman supported by other women, because I think that's really important to show that these things could happen.
Even if they didn't.
Yes, that's right. It'd be nice to think that they might have. Certainly in my experience, when I was working at L'Oreal, we had a male marketing manager, a male sales manager, a male managing director. There's a lot of males around, a lot of women in kind of marketing and support roles. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Well, and that's partly because it is understood to be such a lucrative industry.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of money to be made out of, you know, cosmetics and things like that.
Did you base your lead character at all on women like Elizabeth Arden or Helena Rubinstein?
I didn't base her on them particularly. I read a lot of biographies of Elizabeth Arden. There's one in particular called War Paint, which is about both Elizabeth Arden.
Yes,
absolutely. It's fantastic. It's
about, because they were rivals, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And it's about the rivalry between Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein and how that rivalry, in fact, was a big catalyst for experimentation and innovation in the industry. So in some ways, even though rivalry can be seen to be a bad thing, perhaps in this case, it was a good thing. It kept both women wanting to be a step ahead of the competition. So no, my character isn't based on either of those women, but my character does get a job at Elizabeth Arden's infamous Red Door Salon when she arrives in New York City. And so I did a lot of research into the early treatments that Arden used in her salons, which are quite mind-boggling when you look at them, wrapping faces in bandages with all these creams underneath and charging people a horrendous amount of money for what was nothing more than...
So what else? What's changed?
Yes, exactly. And promising them the world.
Well, now, your novel, with that main character making her way independently in business with cosmetics, it is a kind of women's liberation story. And yet, Natasha, there are plenty of people, men and women, I think, who'd see the whole business of makeup as a kind of tyranny for women, you know, and the creators of this industry as oppressors. Now, I know you worked in the business, but what do you say to that sort of criticism?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think that the point I wanted to make with this book is that here is an example of at a time when society was once again telling women what they could and couldn't do, and there needed to be this movement from women to say that if we want to be able to wear cosmetics, why should we be fired from our positions, and why should we be told that we should be subjected to uncivilized warfare because of the scandalous act of putting rouge on our cheeks. But it's interesting how these days, 100 years later, there is still so much judgment about how much or how little makeup women wear. You know, you only have to pick up a magazine and see articles saying that if you don't wear enough makeup, you won't get a job if you go for an interview, or women being told they're wearing too much and therefore it's, you know, not the kind of thing they should be doing. So it's still a conversation that we're having, but it's almost flipped. Before it was, you know, you can't wear any makeup at all. Now it's, oh, we are going to judge you no matter how much makeup you wear, even if you wear none.
Right. Right. So judgment continues in some sort of...
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Natasha Lester's former career in the makeup industry has inspired her fourth novel. It's called Her Mother's Secret. There's a link on the Life Matters website to Natasha's website if you want to know more. And Natasha, lovely to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amanda Smith with you here in Life Matters. And do let's know your views on wearing makeup. I think we're essentially talking talking about women, but maybe not. Is wearing makeup a kind of tyranny as far as you're concerned, or is it the way you face the world? Have you ever felt judged for wearing too little or too much? You can leave a comment on our Facebook page.